Psalm 77. Another psalm of Asaph. Once again, I point out the honesty of this man, the honesty of Scripture. Not minimizing, not hiding, not keeping back the trouble he was in. I know it's a trite saying these days, footballers often say it, a game of two halves, but this is a psalm of two halves. Not literally the first few verses and then the second section of verses, but there are two main thoughts here as I see it. One part of this psalm is taken up with, I might say, Asaph himself, his troubles, his fears, his doubts, his frustrations, his worries, his anxieties. And the other half of this psalm is taken up with God. Asaph is in it all, but Asaph is in one part of this psalm looking at Asaph, looking at his troubles, looking at his circumstances. And he's in trouble, certainly, and he's in doubt and fear and suffering and sorrow. But he comes out of his trouble, as he did in Psalm 73, when he was in desperate trouble over the state of the arrogant and the ungodly. Then I went into the sanctuary, then I began to see from God's point of view, then I began to think properly. And you get the same thought here, Psalm 77 in verse 10. Then I thought, and that's where the divide comes. Before he is allowing his circumstances to dominate his thinking, and he's looking at himself and his circumstances, but he comes out of his troubles by turning his eyes upon God and looking at God and remembering who God is and what God has done. And there's the lesson for us, believer. I too can be taken up with my circumstances, my fears, my doubts, my frustrations, and my griefs. And they are real and plenty. And we wouldn't hide from the unbeliever, but the godly man knows what it is to pass through the valley of the shadow of death and difficulties and sorrows and trials. The godly woman too. All of us, we suffer in this way. We have to meet these trials and difficulties. It's what we do in these trials and difficulties that marks out the believer from the unbeliever. So what is this man's trouble? Let's look at Asaph first of all. Well, he speaks in verse 2. Distress. And he speaks in verse 2 of losing sleep. I sought the Lord at night, I stretched out untiring hands, and my soul refused to be comforted. His spirit grew faint in verse 3. Verse 4, he couldn't sleep. He was too troubled to speak. And as he thought about his former experience, verse 5, he was in sorrow and grief. And he began to think about things, and he thought about his circumstances, and he felt that God maybe had rejected them forever. Maybe rejected him personally. Maybe it was the state of Israel. We saw that in Psalm 74. The enemies of God had come in, rampaging amongst the people of God and destroying the temple and the signs and marks of God. And the psalmist here, Asaph, verse 7, felt that God had rejected them. Would it never be that their time of blessing would come again? Will he never show his favor again? Has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has he in anger withheld his compassion? No, I don't know what Asaph's trouble was. Was it public? Was it private? It's rather like Paul's thorn in the 2 Corinthians. We're not told what it was, and therefore we can apply the lessons to our circumstances and ourselves, whatever our troubles are. Perhaps Asaph is in the position that Cowper would later, much later, put into verse. Where is the blessedness I knew when first I saw the Lord? Where is the soul-refreshing view of Jesus in his word? Well, this is his trouble anyway. Wherever he is, he's in sorrow, suffering, and difficulty. Maybe I speak to a believer who at this very moment is in some sorrow, difficulty, trial. You can use, maybe you can use Asaph's own words. You know what it is to be losing sleep and worried and frustrated and grieved, anxious, and you wonder if ever you're going to come out again of this terrible difficulty. Maybe this will help. It's scripture. It's not my words, it's God's words. Verse 10, then I thought. And I think there is the secret. We have to get our mind in gear here and start thinking biblically, spiritually, and listening to the right voice. Asaph is looking at his own voice, at his own circumstances and his sufferings, and they're real enough. But now he has to look to God, to his word, to listen to God. To this I will appeal, the ears of the right hand of the Most High. I cried out to God for help, he said in verse 1. I cried out to God to hear me. Verse 2, when I was in distress, I sought the Lord. I stretched out untiring hands. True, he'd been in suffering, but he looked to God, and he remembered what God had done before. Primarily, I think, the works he meditates on and the deeds he recalls from verse 10 onwards up to verse 20 is the deliverance from Egypt, the Exodus, the crossing of the Red Sea, and the way that God had his people locked in on the border of the Red Sea, and the Pharaoh's army had come to crush them. But in the moment of their defeat, the waters saw God. The waters saw, verse 16, and rightly, the very depths were convulsed. The clouds poured down water, and God intervened. And he had, in that great and signal miracle, wrought such a deliverance for Israel. Egypt was destroyed. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. And it seems to me that Asaph is saying, I will listen to this. I will listen to what God has done. I will see what God has done. I will tell myself, I will speak to myself and remind myself that God is still the same. Surely, as a preacher today, I can go further than this. We have the 8th of Romans, for example. And instead of listening to my sins and my failures and my weaknesses, say in Romans 7, I should begin to listen to the Spirit, the witness of the Spirit, Romans 8, verse 9 and onwards. Listening to the Spirit, and what will he do? He will take of the things of Jesus and make them known to me. Look at Christ's suffering on the cross in abject misery, but see the day of resurrection. Look at the disciples in their fears, locked in their room, but see the day of Pentecost, and how God reversed all their sorrows. And what God has done before, God can and will do again. Your ways, O God, verse 13, are holy. What God is so great is our God. You are the God who performs miracles, who display your power among the peoples. With your mighty arm you redeemed your people, the descendants of Jacob and Joseph. That's the old covenant. We can go further now. Christ has died for us. He's poured out his Spirit. Circumstances may be dark, difficult. Trials may be coming. Losses may be around us. We may be frustrated at the low state of the church. And I'll speak for myself. I see Islam rising. I see aggressive atheism powerful. Rome is still ever with us. And I see the entertainment churches are thriving. And I see the cause of God dying, as it seems to me, in my own experience here. But these waters, Islam, Romanism, entertainment religion, atheism, can rise. The very depths can be convulsed again. God can do it. And I cast out these small discourses, and I write my books, not because I know that they have power or influence. They're in weakness, But God can take even the weak and use it the small. You led your people like a flock, that handful as it were, that small despised people, surrounded by their enemies, particularly Egypt. But you led them by the hand of Aaron, the hand of Moses and Aaron, and delivered them. And Christ has come, the Spirit has come. And the Acts of the Apostles, though there's extraordinary things there, the principles still remain. God can take us in our fears and doubts and sorrows and use us even to the pulling down of the mighty. The weapons of our warfare are mighty, even to the glory of God. I remember a story of Lloyd-Jones. Well, the story is an account of Our Lady came to him in great fear, and she was headmistress of a school, I think, and had to take the assembly every day, and she was very nervous about it. And Lloyd-Jones said, "What do you do?" She said, "Well, I say to myself, the Lord is my shepherd, the Lord is my shepherd, the Lord is my shepherd, but it doesn't seem to work." And Lloyd-Jones said, "Say it this way, the Lord is my shepherd." Actually, I would emphasize every word. The Lord is my shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. But primarily, of course, it's true. The Lord is my shepherd. So what's the subject here in Psalm 77? Troubles come, yes. But what are we going to do about them? I think the key is in verse 10. Then I thought. Begin to think. Think biblically. Think from God's point of view. Remember God. Be a thinking believer. If you're an unbeliever, we haven't hidden anything from you. I've hidden nothing this morning in this short discourse. Christians have trouble, but they go to God. Where do you go? To yourself? Asaph went to himself, and what did he find? More sorrow. It was only when he began to think, and he turned back to God, and he remembered the Lord, that light came in to that dark place. Then I thought, to this I will appeal. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Remember God. That's the key then. Then I thought.